Yes. I feel like whenever I'm with y'all, it's like an energy exchange that gets me so weird. In a good way. But not at all.
Yeah.
To see people engage with it, because the way you described that vape is loud as fuck.
I know you
do. I know that shit was like a wind tunnel.
Are you sucking on a vacuum over there, dog?
I thought that you were having an asthma moment.
And he's got a rogue in his mouth. That motherfucker over there getting high.
The first time you ripped that vape, I thought you were having like an asthma.
He was about to Can you not breathe?
I was like, how does Christian not react to him not breathing?
You can't hear it because he's got headphones on.
Earphones on.
He can't hear how loud it is.
Dude, this guy's okay. Turbulence, bro.
We're starting this trippy conversation because we are going to talk a little bit about, although you didn't seem too excited, maps.
No, I'm down. Yeah.
Which is a group of people who got together to talk about what will or will not or maybe could be possible with psychedelics and therapeutic use of psychedelics and beyond.
Yes.
So you attended this.
Yes.
Conference.
Oh, this is where we're going? Oh, okay.
So we're
going
to talk a little bit about
Colorado.
That.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my bad for not sending out show notes. That's my bad.
Yeah.
Caught me up a little bit. Huh?
All these questions come from our producer, Kale, who's been stepping it up on the ones and twos.
Oh.
Crushing it.
Applause for Kale.
Kale coming through with the great questions.
So today on this episode of the Most High Show, I got no guarantees. I don't know where we're going. But I know that I'm sitting with two people who are wholesome in heart and willing to do what they can for the people they serve and care for. And so I think it's going to be a pretty cool time. We're going to talk a little bit about MAPS, a little bit about what's the use of psychedelics and what more so like what framework are they thinking of putting that in. And it's probably some other stuff. So stay tuned to
so
the
excited.
Most High Show.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
I like the way you introduced me.
Oh, I didn't.
It's a wholesome. You did.
Oh, I did.
Yeah,
Two wholesome folks. I love that word. That's one of my favorite words.
Mm-hmm.
Wholesome.
Hey, David, wholesome song for me. Huh? Okay, so, Kara.
Yes.
Last time you were here, you were our subject matter expert.
Dude, she killed that
trauma.
Shit too, yo.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I was healed just because you talked about it.
Yeah.
Stop,
my trauma.
David.
My trauma went down a notch.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
No, but that was a very clippable. That was a very clippable episode.
Very big
and
time.
Thanks. No.
You know, I saw like you guys put out clips. You put personally clip. We've put out clips everywhere, and to see people engage with it because the way you described that vape is loud as fuck.
I know you.
I know that shit was like a wind tunnel.
Are you sucking on a vacuum over there, dog?
I thought that you were having an asthma moment.
And he's got a rogue in his mouth. That motherfucker over there getting high.
The first time you ripped that vape, I thought you were having like an asthma.
He was about to Can you not breathe?
I was like, how does Christian not react to him not breathing?
You can't hear it because he's got headphones on.
Earphones on.
He can't hear how loud it is.
Dude, this guy's turbulence, bro.
God.
But you did such a great.
You need to double pouch it. Put two zennies in.
Triple pouch it and keep the trash can close in case you barf. But you did a great. I love how you talk about it, right? Like you talk about it in a very informed, but you're not like. But it's also digestible. It's understandable.
And hell so, yeah!
I think we really did get like the word out about that because it's been such a. When we talked about that, the trauma and the buzzword of that, and kind of everyone. And so you really helped break that down.
Thanks.
And I think we even talked about the murder, a murder of ravens or crows.
Oh, yeah.
But today,
mm-hmm.
we're coming to you for something else.
Mm-hmm. We need some other stuff.
So we did a documentary. Kara's a part of that. And
yeah, that was awesome.
In it's called Everything Is Fine. Now now streaming on most high media.
The energy in the theater at the release of it was so cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
And it was like so many people I'd never met before, but there just felt like something connective happening just while it was playing. It felt really, really cool.
Yeah. It was inadvertently a commercial for mushrooms. It wasn't my intention. But that's the thing.
Them psychedelics, man.
Well, they sell themselves.
They sell themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool, but those psychedelics, yeah, right? Those,
that's what everyone brings up.
A cambo, a combo, what's that? Combo?
Yeah. Yeah. But in that film.
I can't deal. You're like the classmate you can't sit next to.
Right. But in that film, you were.
It's going to make me laugh.
You were getting ready to go to this MAPS thing.
Yeah.
So what is MAPS?
Yeah.
And why you want to go?
Yeah. MAPS is the Multidisciplinary Alliance of Psychedelic Science. They've been around for a long time. It was in Denver, really wild, way bigger conference than I thought it was going to be. It ended up being over 300 speakers, and these are all experts in different parts of the field.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, very really, really good. And then there were over, I think, 12 or 13,000 people attended, which was wild.
Who was attending?
Yeah, so I didn't really know what to expect. I know I followed MAPS for a while, and I guess I'll kind of back up. My initial curiosity about MAPS is because, not even about the psychedelics part, but because they have committed so much energy to asking for research that is independent or focused on natural remedies or focused on things that are kind of outside the box. And of course, their main focus is psychedelics, but because of their desire to do research with psychedelics, they're also advocating for a lot of research that's really out of the box. So as they kind of pave the way for independent research and research that doesn't really fit the mold of only looking for psychiatric interventions, it opens a door for other kinds of conversations. So that was kind of my original.
And they probably talk about how do they fund that, right? Like funding it and sourcing that. Maybe this might be a place where that some of that those connections are happening, right? Because most research is funded by big pharmaceutical companies because they have the R&D budgets, right?
Right. Yeah, and so that was my initial support of MAPS was just because they're kind of like the underdog in the current system of mental health. And I'm drawn to everything that is kind of questioning or pushing back on the system in general, because my belief is that you can push on it as hard as you want. And the stuff that's solid and sustainable for folks will always hold up. And if you can have resistance on the rest of it, then some of these things that are very temporary or we might look back on with a little bit of mental health shame will fall apart.
I really think that you just described eternal strength too. I mean, that's like their movement, really. You know what I mean? Something different, something, you know, almost anti-psychiatry approach to, you know, new, looking outside of the box.
Well, it's kind of a love for questioning the status quo, and it's not because, you know, just trying to cause chaos for chaos. It's like that truth is truth is truth. Like the things that are really good for people will always hold up, but not wanting to shut the door on other things that might be good or just accept certain kinds of current research wholesale, like facts. The whole idea of science is that you can study something and then someone can do another study that counters your theory, you know? And so what good is all this research if there's no counter to it or if there's no continuation of this conversation? And so that was kind of my initial support for MAPS, was just because they are pushing back on a lot of the same stuff that we push back on. And they're asking a lot of questions like, why is the system built for research in this way? And who is funding this stuff? And how come this, you know, the findings of this were kind of distorted? And is there a more natural way? Is there a way that's less damaging to people's systems over time? And all of that aligns with me, even outside of the psychedelic component. I think my favorite part of attending MAPS was connecting with other people that were there. I didn't know. I followed maps for a long time, and I know that they're super professional and research-oriented, but I didn't know if I was going to get there and just find, like, 13,000 Wooks or, like, you know, people just, like, out of their mind all the time or what. And it wasn't just for professionals, so I really didn't know, you know.
Who's going to be
like,
there?
How's it going to be?
What's it going to look like?
But I think the common denominator was I met tons of people all along the spectrum of people who didn't know anything about psychedelics and were kind of there for that initial reason too. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just here to back a kind of counter question. And then to, you know, people who have had gigantic healing with psychedelics and think that it, you know, is the answer for a lot. So many doctors. Medical doctors and psychiatrists. And the common theme in that was they were basically just saying, we got into this profession because we wanted to be healers. We feel like the system is reducing us to just prescribers. And so we just want to learn about what would it look like to become healers again, which was really interesting. And a lot of those people, you know, weren't necessarily sold on the psychedelics part. They don't know.
Yeah.
But they were just like, I don't feel like a doctor anymore. I feel like a signature, or I feel like I just kind of follow the flow chart to what the system tells me to do for my patient. And I mean, some of the most beautiful conversations I've had with psychiatrists in forever were there just because of the curiosity and the searching, and, mm-hmm. and we're there for the same reason. It's just like, so that was really cool. Maps. So some of it was very informational. And like, I got to go to Dennis McKenna, who's been in ethnopharmacology forever, doing a bunch of research in the Amazon. And he talked a bunch about different, you know, plant medicines that are there that we have no knowledge of here. So some of it was very educational.
Yeah, not even necessarily like psychedelic, just healing things in the forest and in the jungle.
Yeah. And, you know, what does that look like as some of these elder healers are dying, and how is that information getting passed on? So that part was just very educational. And then there was a huge amount of conversations that were just like, what does this look like in practical application? Is this going to be doctors using this, therapists using this? What does legalization look like? You know, what does integration work mean? And those conversations were all over the place. But
I know some practitioners, who were really, I know one practitioner was really against it, the maps. And I think his fear is that they will just take the medical model, the current medical model, and just put that on top of some of these more natural remedies for mental health healing.
Yeah.
So he you know, which is kind of like, you know, so you kind of like doesn't want to join and be a part of it, but it sounds like this is still in a phase where they're talking about a lot of that stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and MAPS, from my understanding, and I'm by no means an expert on MAPS, but from my understanding, is really a research and advocacy organization. They are not the industry rollout of what this means.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's why there's a lot of conversation. I know going to MAPS, a huge emphasis on them being worried about psychedelics being rolled out in the way that medical marijuana was, and huge worry about having a repeat of what happened with psychedelic revolution in the past, which was just this.
What was so bad with that?
And some of it was like, you know, they really highlighted some of the backswing against the use of psychedelics previously. Some of those old guys were like, yeah, we kind of deserve that. Like, we had no respect for this medicine. We had no respect for the therapeutic value.
Right.
And it was getting wild.
And now that stigma is so hard to freaking shake.
Right.
Right. Along with so many other stigmas, but especially psychedelics. I know, like, I know when we went to Denver, you know, it's hard for me to think of it in, because of my history with psychedelics, it's hard for me to really, I had to be there and see it. And see the and talk to the people, you know, that were actually going through it, and to really shake my own stigma of it. Because when I think of it, I'm always thinking about tripping. Yeah.
You're thinking about dosing the whole school with acid as they walk into the door.
Yeah. Wow. At an alternative ed.
I feel like it's story time with David. David, would you share this story of the statute of limitations is passed, I believe.
Yeah, we had a bunch of LSD from
a bunch of it
from my friend's brother in Virginia Tech. So we had a whole shitload of it, and we just thought it would be first. We all dosed, and like it was alternative, so we could like do whatever we wanted to do there. Yeah. Like when you went to this alternative ed, there was like frisbees, there were people like playing the bays, you know, people
sounds awesome
playing blackjack and shit like that before you even walked in. You know, it's like you could smell like weed. And back then, like that, it was just such a different kind of play. It was like mm-hmm. the answer for guys like me to go try to get an education. So we came back. Me and my friend had a whole bunch of it, and we just started dosing everybody, man. You know what I mean? And everybody was like, a lot of people didn't know really what it was, and it was really good stuff. And whenever I left, I remember being like, because we were all tripping, right? And when I would look down, and there was this girl just trying to like dig through like a man grate, like the grates, just trying to like pull it out, and she was just like talking to it and just like waving her hands in the air. And my friend was like, "Hey!" And she like looked up, like all surprised, and he went, and so started spinning around, and she was just like freaking out. And everybody just like almost at the same time, you just saw people like walking by and like smiling and laughing or like scared, like walking very slow. I was like, we got to roll, dude. Everybody
here's tripping. Get out of here.
Everyone's tripping. I don't know how that happened. I need to get up out of here.
We thought it was funny at first, what I mean? But then it kind of started, people started getting scared, and it became a thing.
So hence his.
So my stigma of this medicine, you know,
the people that misuse it are terrible.
It was very hard to shake. It was hard to shake.
I don't know who created the stigma.
Oh, wait a minute. I made the stigma of LSD. My bad. It's like, no, but
now all your classmates are congresswomen.
But whenever I went to Denver and like, you know, was really trying to see through that, and like, but I still got it. Like I could see like how like microdosing could probably be helpful for anxiety. You know, open you up a little bit, cool things out. And this is like how I'm thinking about it in my head. And it wasn't until I spoke to some very awesome, smart people that really explained it in a different way. And I saw, you know, like, and that's just like, I'm just talking about like LSD and shrooms. But when you go to like Ibogaine and things like that, that's not like something like you do at a party. That whole process is, that's not it. Like this, there is a thing going on that's like, you know, that could potentially be a life-changing experience.
Yeah,
you're going to go through rather than just dropping a couple hits and listening to Jerry Garcia all night.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think some of the fear is that because you can take these medicines, especially like Ibogaine, so, you know, you have the raw root bark that gets then, like, I guess, boiled down or some sort of process to an alkaloid, which is a specific molecular structure. Mm-hmm. And then what they then try to do, somebody tried to take that molecular structure and patent it.
Right.
And so that's, I think, where this practitioner was getting at is like, if they find the compound and then they patent that, then this thing is no longer a, like, you know, it just becomes another thing in the system, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's going to be limited access. It's going to be hard to get a piece of it. And so right now, like where it is in Colorado and in Oregon, they're in this kind of wild land where they have this grace period where practitioners are able to freely distribute it.
Yeah.
They can't sell it.
Right, right.
But they're basically able to practice on a state level being completely legal.
Right.
Still illegal on a federal level.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of see like the big kind of system coming in and going, no.
Well, it makes me nervous to think about, like, when I think about the application of something like psychedelics as a medicine, right? When you talk about MAPS and these big conventions and things like that, like, I'm all for the research. And if everybody's going in there with an educated, open mind on, and really trying to, like, figure out how to, you know, do this, you know what I mean? I like it, but at the same time, it's like, oh, man, this is another way to, like, you know what I mean? Big pharma psychedelics,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the concern.
That's the
concern.
Well,
I think,
right?
With any big movement, you're going to have
that,
all of it.
That entity.
You're going to have people that are way out of line. You're going to have people that are super well intentioned. It's just going to be all of it together.
Yeah.
What I think is that this is going to be a thing. And so it's like, all I know is I want to be listening and trying to take in as many voices as possible. And I'm not an expert on how it'll look. Or you know, and not even an expert on all of the research, but I think I did really appreciate that the spaces, at least that I found myself in there, were so conversational and so many questions, and it made me feel a little bit better than if I had walked in and they were like, we have a 15 step plan for how exactly this will look. And a lot of it was like, what is the value system and intention, which is a pretty early conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was really interesting. I also love spaces, again, kind of psychedelics aside, I love spaces where you have multi-generational voices on the same topic.
No, that's really cool.
Which was really cool. Yeah. There were some practitioners, some therapists, some doctors, some psychonauts that have been in it forever and ever. And then you also had people that are like still in school or trying to figure it out. And so I'm always really interested in those spaces too.
Yeah.
But I think overall I felt a camaraderie in the spirit of, whatever exists now can't be all there is for mental health care.
Now that's a big, that's awesome to go to a place that, like, you know, cause I saw when Wes told me about it, I was looking at like the kind of like the advertisements for it, and it looked very like, oh, this is, but if you come off, if you come away from it like, oh man, everybody's just trying to figure this out and really learn and try to, you know, get something out of it and see which way to go. But when I was like, oh, Chopra is going to be there.
Yeah. Well, and it was all of it. I mean, there are definitely
celebrity event.
I think there's always people that are going to be, one size fits all. Even, I mean, that's the ironic part too of psychedelics, is like, you even have people that are super in psychedelics that are like, psychedelics are the answer and we don't need mental health care at all, and we don't need physical fitness, and we don't, you know, and it's like,
you get all,
and so you all have that. All of it represented.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did expect it to be a little bit more concrete in thinking. And so I was really inspired by all this like conversation and stuff, which was cool. But a lot of, I know hearing from the organizers of MAPS, there was a huge concern for it becoming just another piece of the industry. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of concern about the lack of consideration for environment. So they're saying, and they were kind of using ketamine as an example, where they were like, you know, with our experience and our understanding of psychedelics, you can't say that you have the same experience laying down with eye shades on and, you know, jazz playing in some clinician's office that you would have if you are out in nature or in your home or with people you love. And so even the clinical setting is going to have an impact. And how does that fold in?
Wow, what an angle that, just having a conversation like that is big, right?
Yeah.
That's huge. I love that.
Yeah. And then I heard the people from MAPS, because a lot of the speakers are from all different kinds of organizations, but the MAPS folks kept underlining, nothing is a shortcut to healing, and there is not one thing. And so kept circling back to intention. It was like the intention that you bring to this. If you are looking at psychedelics as a shortcut to your life's journey, you know, then it's not going to be that.
Right.
And so those conversations are always really interesting too.
And I think that's probably how people now address mental health, or really medicine, mm-hmm. is what's the quickest way to get me back to work?
Right.
What's the quickest way to get me to optimal productivity? Mm-hmm. Let me get that. Is that a pill? Is that a shot? Is that a cryo chamber? What is it?
Make
Let
it
me
stop
do that
now.
So I can get back mm-hmm. to getting this money, yeah, you know? Yeah. And so...
Or even sometimes it's logistics and like getting back to work, or I don't want to waste my time on this process. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's also such a deficit in their intuitive knowledge of what they need that they're looking for a, you know, prescriptive model.
Yeah, they're looking for something.
Because they're in such a deficit where they're like, I have no idea what I need for myself. So you tell me, do I need to be here every mm-hmm. week? Do I need to be here every month? You know?
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Give me the way to do this so I can yeah. stop feeling this way.
Yeah. Which is always rough.
That's not a good place to be.
Your face got so dark.
I was self-reflecting a little bit.
I know. You were like in another
That's
place.
Not where you want to go.
Okay. So I think we covered the MAPS questions.
Cool.
But there was a couple questions we didn't get to last time.
Okay.
And I think this is a relevant subject matter.
Yeah.
And it's about relationship with drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
right? I'd like to know mm-hmm. how you approach that in your own, like, work.
Yeah.
Right? Do you... Because so much of like drugs and alcohol is like binary, like we talked about, right? So you're an addict, you're not addicted. Cool. Which one are you in?
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe the way you might approach stuff is maybe a little more mm-hmm. shades of gray. Can you just talk a little bit about how you work with that?
Yeah. Well, just kind of as a foundation, I really don't love doing, I guess I'll reframe in the positive. I like it the best when I'm working with somebody in active addiction or like early recovery, and they have their recovery community and they have a sponsor and they have all of these things, and not just a sponsor, but really the community voice, because I think that it shows that there are many different paths to, even within the structure of AA, there are so many different paths and so many different. And then the other thing is there are a lot of things that happen, I think, in early recovery that you're not going to refine without being bumped into by other people lot in a close relationship kind of way. And so that's kind of the first part. But I mean, it's so complicated. I think it's like this tapestry with all of these threads that come together. Mm-hmm. And I guess initially I want to hear how someone's framing their use for themselves. And I'm always kind of listening to the places where they believe that it's connecting them to something or to themselves or to someone else. Because I think that such a big part of our human experience is connective and disconnective. And so it's like, anytime you're telling me that a substance makes you feel more connected to your creativity or to your community or to yourself or whatever, and then I think that's really interesting. And then the second thing is listening for all of the times that this relationship with a substance has eroded a personal integrity. Mm-hmm. So it's like you've gone against yourself, and it's kind of splitting you from yourself.
Like you purposely did what you know you would never normally do, and you're doing it like repeatedly,
breaking promises to yourself. Making promises and
breaking
promises.
Them babies.
And so you can ask those questions and listen for those answers when the person already is in a kind of held environment where they're not in crisis, I guess, right?
Well, I feel like you kind of hear it even in crisis. It just comes out at a different pitch. It's like, no, but I mean, all jokes aside, like, people still are telling that story. It's just in a different way. Yeah. It's still the story of connection versus integrity integrity.
That, yeah, that's it.
Well, I'm thinking back to one of the first things we did together, which I'd like to do again, when we did a parent webinar.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I felt like you and Wes both spoke to these kind of like this thinking of substance, especially for young people, in a relational way. Like, mm-hmm. how are you relating to it? Maybe in beginning early use.
How does it serve you? And
yeah. But that's also kind of before. How does that change with this, with how fentanyl is in all these pressed pills, how fentanyl is in cocaine, fentanyl is in so much. Mm-hmm. It's just everywhere, right? Like I think it's an 85 to 90% chance that if you buy any kind of pill from the street,
if it's not from
it's got fentanyl in it, right? It's just a matter of how much is made it into that press, right? So how does that change the way you're working with somebody who might be beginning this experimental phase, you know? Because when I was experimenting, I mean, like, that wasn't there, right? There was no, like, flesh-eating bacteria in the cocaine. There was no, like, fentanyl everywhere. So experimentation was...
Experimentation.
It was just experimentation.
There was something. Yeah.
But now I feel like young people
be curious about.
Right. But now I feel like young people, it's a much more dangerous thing to experiment.
I mean, the difficult thing is my urgency doesn't necessarily impact someone else's urgency to act safer. And so it's like
that's a hard thing to gauge, right? Because you know the reality of it. So in this conversation, you can't be like you gotta stop doing that shit.
Yeah, I mean, we all stood around in elementary school. We all stood around the like crashed car because of alcohol. And like we all looked at it. And then what? You know, it's like, it's hard, especially with adolescents. There's this element of like a disconnect between how fragile life and life as we know it is.
They're not gonna, you know, that car. Right. That wrecked car, or even like, you know, the dead body falling over, is not going to make a teenager, it's not going to kill their curiosity doing it. And in a weird way, it's going to encourage them to try it as a dare. Everything is like a dare when you're a kid. You know what I mean? Your curiosity makes you want to go try something that you've never tried before.
Yeah.
You know, period.
What did our homie say? Just got to watch more people die.
Yeah, that's not.
Some
I mean,
have
I wish
got to die.
I don't want to roast
make
anyone.
A positive change.
Yeah,
but I see, like, the reason why I asked.
I wish you could see, like, in that conversation. I just felt so immediately tired. As soon as he's like, people need to die for people to stop using drugs, I just felt so tired.
But there is a shift.
So wrong on so many levels.
There's a shift in the 12-step community I've witnessed, right? Like, if you read 12-step literature, 12-step literature is, hey, the seat's there for you.
Right.
You don't want it, get out. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't think you got a problem, cool, go try it some more. Like, we love you, but I'm not going to chase you. That's the literature. Mm-hmm. But now, because we do see our friends dying, because it's those daily death rates, you know, are going higher and higher, right? Mm-hmm. That I see a shift in the 12-step room where it's like, okay, maybe we shouldn't just tell this person to kick it. Like, Kale had a friend that reached out to him in crisis. And Kale's was, you don't mind me sharing this, brother, dude. And so Kale was really conflicted because on one level, it's like, well, I can't like go, I can't change. Like if he wants to use, which he expressed, that's what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I can't change that. But also like there's a high likelihood that this person's going to die with fentanyl.
Yeah.
So can I, like this was the conundrum, right? That he was in. We talked through that. Like, so should I just show up? Do I need to just pull him out of there, right? And so there's a shift, I think, in 12-step community where it's like we're starting to kind of chase people a little bit because
the anxiousness,
you get tired of going to funerals. You get tired of like, you know what I mean?
Well, and I think for me, the idea of releasing someone to their journey is more for me. It's to check my intentions and my energy and the way I'm viewing you, because as soon as I try to control you, I begin to resent you.
Tricking the wisdom judge you. Right there.
Yeah, and so it's like that is to get me in alignment. That's to get me in alignment, because the worst thing that could happen to me is to have a blind spot because of my control, my desire to control you, and then miss a way that I could help you. Wow. Because of my own.
So it's like, it's like a regardless, I mean, you know, we feel the urgency because we see the facts of the matter. But it's the same thing as like your parents telling you to stop something. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of urgency you want to give. Please, you know, don't do this. Mm-hmm. This is poison. It'll kill you. You know what I mean? It's no difference. That's the difference between your parents telling you to stop doing drugs or you going to see a counselor and having a session about, you know, where you're struggling. You know, what's drugs doing? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your relationship with drugs and alcohol? That's a difference. If you come at it with that urgency, even though we know the facts, you're nothing but this authoritative, like, don't do that type of thing, or you will.
Yeah.
Die.
Well,
that
and
angle
it's.
Is not
well,
relevant.
I got three and kids that are in that stage of development. Yeah. So, you know, my role is my role.
Yeah,
right?
You're a parent.
Yeah.
So my job is to inform them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all I can do is give you the facts. Like, the facts is don't take a pill if, you know, matter of fact, don't take that shit if you ain't by the box, right? Because. Mm-hmm. You know, people mix everything in one bottle or something, you know, like you can't trust that anymore. It's not like that the way it was, right? Like, I would never tell my kids, but it's basically like, I'd prefer you smoke green flower bud than Delta 9 vapes or vape cartridges because you don't know what's in it. So
that's a harm reduction tool to say that.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, but as a father, I'm not thinking of harm reduction. I'm just trying not to bury my kid. Yeah. Right. So.
But it's hard for you to say. But if you caught them with a cart, right, it would be hard for you to say, hey, this shit, you know what's in this shit, man? If you're going to smoke flour.
Right.
It's hard for you.
Let me show you how to roll it.
Yeah. Listen.
The problem is you don't know how to roll a blunt.
Yeah.
You just want to hide the stank. That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is hard, but I think. You know, the process, at least for me, always has to be to check myself first.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's like, is there something that I'm trying to do because it makes me feel better or because I actually think that it could help illuminate something or bring something to the awareness of somebody that I love and care about, which is all my clients, you know, it's like I see them and I get to see them being creative and these parts of themselves that don't always come out all the time, you know, just because of the space and because of the way that we work. And so it's like, I see that, and I need them to see that. But a lot of times the controlling energy, it doesn't help. Yeah. And so it's like, even the psych education and the risk reduction and all of that, when it comes from a relational place and I'm saying it in a way that you can hear instead of just saying it in a way that makes me feel like I checked a box, then I think we're already kind of...
Yeah.
And it also keeps a respect for that person because I don't want to view people as like projects or...
Yeah.
I think what they're going through is so much more meaningful than that.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult... to find the intersection between what keeps me at peace and what makes me understand that I've done everything that I can, but also what is reverent of someone's process. And
that's a tension you're usually constantly managing, probably even while you're sitting in there, right?
Absolutely.
I think of like, it's like that old adage of like, it takes a village, you know, like your uncle can talk to you about some things that your dad can't. You know, your neighbor.
That's it. That's the thing.
Your neighbor could talk to you about some things that your dad can't, right? Like, so we need, but I don't think that that's how, you know, American family culture is. It's kind of like, this is my family unit.
Right.
We do things this way. And do we really have like, you know, where we have the open door to allow some of these other relationships come in.
I think now that, you know, I think it's a blessing for me to be a counselor today because I was raised in don't say shit to nobody about anything.
Right.
Especially when it came to anything that was like controversial. Right. I think my generation of kids coming up, when they tried to commit suicide, no, their parents don't say that to nobody. But now there is a big, I would say big acceptance of like things like suicidal ideation and understanding that, and somebody going, you know, to treatment, and then somebody participating in group. Like when I run teen groups, man, it's like all what they say.
Yeah.
It's really being able to present something and then have them talk it out. You know what I mean? To where
stop the recording then. Oh, sorry. You keep streaming though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, is it still recording?
We talked the computer full.
Oh, we did. What time is it?
No, we're getting oh, okay. We're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You feel like it's been okay? Worth your time?
Yeah. Oh my God. Just hanging out with y'all is.
Yeah.
We could be not podcasting, just chilling.
But don't you agree? Yeah. Like, it is no, really about. It's like you can't.
So back up a little bit so he can cut in on this.
Oh, okay. All right. Now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So back to what you're.
Should I delete something and do it from the recording or just bring in the live and do it?
Yeah, just keep live going.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like back to what you were saying is like you're gonna hear something from your uncle different than you hear from your dad. Mm-hmm. That's really my position. That's my profession.
Your uncle counselor.
I'm the uncle.
Uncle counselor.
Yeah. Why is that so accurate though?
Right.
I feel like you're my uncle.
That's
his uncle counselor.
Uncle counselor Dave.
He's Reverend.
You have like you have some uncle energy.
I got his number.
I wanted to do a summer coaching for teens, and I wanted to call it Drunk Uncle. Because your drunk uncle's dope. Yeah. Like you want to kick it with your drunk uncle.
I saw a meme or something that was like before Joe Rogan, you had your three friends' older brothers. That's facts. It's like I swear to God, there's aliens.
Telling you now.
I love that you're saying that because, like, I grew up in a French family, right? So everyone.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my mother's French Algerian.
Oh.
And so everyone's your cousin, and your aunt is really your cousin, but they're older than you, so you can't really call them your cousin. And so that family dynamic. So I remember growing up like that and having those.
God, that makes so much more sense.
Outside of like that, outside of that guidance that you know, that thumb guidance from your parents, you had other outlets of people that had knowledge of stuff, and you listen to their perspective. You know how many parents come up to me and say, "Man, I said that shit. They never freaking listen."
But
to
you say it.
I say it. It's a different vibe.
I mean, sometimes that even happens with like Mike and I, where I'll say something to one of the kids' internal strength, and Mike can say the exact same thing.
Right. And they
2 days later, and it just and it's like. But I think that the ideal is when you ask somebody how they came back to themselves or how they got well or however you want to phrase it. If they can't really look at any one person, it's a collective, like that's the win. It's like, I don't want to be one giant force. The ideal is to have all these pieces that come together.
Yeah, because
support
all those
people in different ways.
Because all these influences in your life, it's like a timing thing. Like right now, like, you know, when I was 16, all I was heard about me is I never listened to shit.
Yeah.
Right. But if you look at me at 50, I am a replica of like every thought, morality, likes of my parents, like my grandparents, my grandmother and grandfather, everything that they did, I duplicate now. But back then, you know what I mean? It wasn't my time to learn from them in that way.
Right.
I had to hear my influences came from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. You ain't trying to hear. It's not that your parents really don't understand you. It's like you ain't trying to hear that shit from them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, I think adolescence and youth respond to an energy exchange so much anyway. I think that's what's so cool about them is that they're in this space, the majority of youth that I know. It's like that whole saying about like people will forget what you said, but they won't forget how you make them feel. I feel like it's times 100 for young people.
Absolutely.
It's like that energetic exchange is huge.
Yeah, they want the vibe.
And the willingness to just kind of get into their world for a second.
That's healing for me. That's therapeutic value for me to be chilling with these dudes and like listening to them and like see the interaction, what they have to give. Like I learned so much and I'm like, damn, these, I know I was not like that. Cause these are like some of the, I mean, intellectual, intelligent, bright, creative, just better. It's like, you know, I'm looking at an evolution in a way of like creatures, man. It's like, damn, dude, I wasn't doing no shit. I wasn't even talking no shit like that when I was that age.
Yeah. You
know, it's beautiful to be a part of something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a incredible thing to be in a position where other people invite you to the kind of holiest spaces in their consciousness anyway. And I think that...
God, that's... Don't you love the way
you know, I have
that.
Like
that's
a...
Nice. That was a great way to say people let you hang out with them.
Well, it's like I think about grief and it's like even though... Sitting with somebody that's in the throes of grief is really heavy and it's hard to watch, like so much suffering. Mm. It's also like, this is one of the most spiritual, informative, and transformative spaces that you're going to be in. And to be able to, even if I don't do anything, but I'm just here sharing in that experience, it's like, what a beautiful invitation. And I think we used to have that more. It's like, the emergence of therapy and therapists, I think the ideal would be for all of the need for that to go away. And we go back to a place where it's a natural
just hanging out and like, you know, looking out and trying to talk and trying to learn. And like,
see, I said that same thing to him on a podcast and he shut me down, but you said it.
What are you
talking
about?
He's over here.
What are you talking about?
Well, dude? I think that the difficult part of it.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
I was review the tape.
I was maybe we weren't podcasting. We're always podcasting in my head because our conversations are. Maybe we were eating ramen or something. But that was essentially what I'm saying. Like it's like, to me, what qualifies you and you both to be effective therapists is. Mm. Not the education. Mm-hmm. It's the, you like I said, the this, what I call you guys in the beginning?
Wholesome.
Wholesome.
The wholesomeness.
This, now that can't be taught, right?
Yeah.
So because you have that in you, that's what makes you like a sacred healer. Mm-hmm. The teaching is great and gives you a lot of tools to use in that state. Mm-hmm. But the thing that qualifies you, I think, is an inherent thing that's just, in you,
inside of you. When did I disagree with that? I don't understand what you're, I don't know what talking about.
Oh yeah, you was like basically like, yeah, but then your homies don't help you out, and then what you gonna do, you know? And,
yeah.
Oh, I can't hear enough about your addictionologist. Well, you telling me you don't need therapists? And I was like, well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that ideally. Yeah.
I think a lot of pieces, and I mean, it's so hard to speak and. Such broad terms too, because it's like, what are you using a therapist for? Like, what is your intention there? Yeah, what kind of community do you have? What kind of accountability do you have? What kind of tools do you have to even like get to a deep place with yourself and figure out your own intuition and all that? And so I think it changes, but, I understand. I'm very skeptical of mental health and therapy and therapists. Mm-hmm. In general, it's kind of ironic that I am one.
But you are a therapist.
Yeah. But I feel like the education part on a low level gives us a modern language to be able to navigate mental health things with someone in a different way. If you get a good education, then I do think that there's a part of understanding neurochemistry and physiology.
Yeah.
But that's not, 'cause that doesn't come stock in all.
Right.
Mental health education.
And that doesn't really, like, I feel like that is valuable when you're talking to your colleagues in like explaining and describing, right?
Yeah.
But I can't take that attitude into a group of people and like try to play that role. Mm-hmm. I have to become one of them.
But doesn't
I'm not one of them. I have to be me in there. Like,
Me. Disarmed. You have to be disarmed.
Yeah, I have to be me in there for trust to happen, for honesty to happen, for like true interaction to go on. We have to, and then like, you know, I guess like after a conversation, when I'm trying to really think how I can be helpful, maybe the educational tools can start becoming
Yeah, because you don't. Let me pull. I got this little wrench here. I got this Allen right here. I got this flashlight across my head. I'm going to get in there and tinker, tinker, tinker.
Yeah.
But like,
well, coming back to kind of what we talked about the last time, which was like, that's a way of describing working on mechanical things. Yeah. And it's like, is there a place for the biologists that learned how to recuperate, you know, burned environments? Absolutely. Is there a place for the master gardener that has never stepped in a classroom but is fourth generation regenerative rancher? Absolutely. And so it's like there are many places in this this modern time you might need a clinical education to know how to clean up
just to navigate
oil spill, kind of mental health oil spill, but you might need master gardener. Gail gets it. You know what I mean? It's like, so there's kind of a place for both.
That's why I was so stoked when we've had Zach on the show, Dr. Y.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
You just pulled that right out of my brain.
Because he breaks out the way he views the brain is like a machine, right? Here's how it functions. This does this and this does that. And when I was first exposed, when I'm looking at the lens of my own mental health with my addictionologist, when I was exposed to my brain in that way, it gave me new framework to kind of go, I kind of understand that a little bit more, right? Like there's this thing happening that's, but we don't normally integrate all those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely not general practitioner doctors. Mm-hmm. They're just not equipped or even trained or educated at that level. Right.
Well, it kind of goes in a circle too, because it's like a true physiological expert, medical expert, whatever, will just describe the body in a way that makes you more reverent for it. And like, this is more, this works even better than I realized.
Yeah.
And I think it's the middle ground of someone that knows enough to describe you as a machine, but not enough to really bring you into the incredible miracle that is the fact that our
body,
you know, that it's even. Yeah. And so I think that there's something to be said for people like that can like explain it, but it leaves you with a sense of like respect and wonder versus explaining it like, oh, yeah, that's because you're dopamine.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that.
You know what I mean? It's
and
like,
Zach, like, he breaks the brain down to where I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
I get it. I understand it. Like his whole, you know, and that's natural. That's in him. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if he was like taught to speak that way, but this is for me, I feel like I'm just talking to this dude that's like has a way of explaining things where I get it. And
because he goes, you got a shit ton of neurons in your brain. I'm like, yeah, I get that.
And he'll like look at you.
He's like, your old lady's tripping on you. You know, that's when your hippocampus is like, and I'm like, yes. Exactly.
And he'll smile and be like, right?
Right?
Okay. And then he'll keep going. It's like, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
That's
funny. Get it now. He's really good. We got to see him again, man. Yeah.
Okay, so as we land the plane, there's no moral. I don't know that there's a moral to the story today. I think we've covered.
There are no morals.
We covered a lot of things.
Everything's a
do
moral.
What you want. Live what you want. Do what you like.
Ooh.
I said, guys, the girls dance.
Yeah.
We talked about
it's
maps.
The dance for me.
Just act a fool. It's okay if you drool. Yeah. Everybody's going to trip and jump in the pool and do what you like. Do what you like. If you came here, you got to show and improve and do that dance until you don't move. Do what you like. Talk how you like. You know what I'm talking about.
What if you just like Monty Python style just kept going?
Just kept going.
Like forever.
And that's it. Just fade out the podcast.
Like 15 minutes.
That song is like 8 minutes long. Shout out Digital Underground. We talk about maps. We talk about healing. We talk about a lot of stuff. I know we're going to get good clips, and if anyone's made it to this point in the show, you might have questions.
Yeah.
And we always want you to know that we're here to support you. So you can email contact at themosthighshow.com. If you're under 40, then you can just DM us. find us on a social media platform. Email? Who's going to email?
Y'all email?
Why are you typing with claws?
Y'all really do that?
Yeah, it's like yeah, a, it's like email. Fax machines yeah. to them, dude. They're like email.
Can I say something really quick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I feel like this has all been a very cohesive talk. Mm. I think at the very beginning, we were talking about spirituality in the same way we were talking about therapy. I think you talking about a wider scope of your spirituality led you to become an interfaith reverend, right? To go to seminary school in that route because things were so you needed a wider look. You were taking a same with going to MAPS. What did you get away from it? You got this like, oh man, it's not, you know, it's all tunnel vision. People are really trying to think outside of the box and get a wider scope of healing.
Right.
You know, and then when we talk about therapy, you know, we talked about, you know, not necessarily talking down, meeting somebody where they're at, being a part of the group instead of being like this clinician and trying to do things, controlling somebody, the urgency of, you know, fentanyl and how it kills, you know, what do you do with that anxiousness in yourself when you look at somebody and you do have this general fear that they're going to die, that trying to control that is the opposite of what, you know, so I think it was very, very cohesive.
You landed the plane.
Yeah, that was a good summary.
Yeah, why don't you sign us off?
Thank you, folks, man. Listen, all right? If you don't know, you should know that The Most High Show is the Netflix of recovery. We got documentaries, podcasts, we got spirituality, we got the steps, we got awesome topics, we got professionals that come in and rap with us every week, and like we go there with these topics that are very relevant to, you know, people that are trying to heal today, whether it be mental health, the stigma of addiction, alcoholism, you know, identification, religion, all that kind of stuff. We touch on those topics in a very sincere way on The Most High Show. So tune in and watch us. Peace.